Okay, everybody, welcome to another edition of Liberty Lens, where we talk about one issue and focus in on it of interest to libertarians and hopefully others. I am your host, Big John. Joining me as usual on this Wednesday afternoon, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, we're back on our regular schedule, middays on Wednesdays. I think this is a little bit better than bleary-eyed at night.
That's probably true. And speaking of bleary-eyed at night, I think it's important that our audience understand that neither you nor I went to Harvard University, which is what we're going to talk about today, that we have had friends and family in the Ivy League.
Yes.
And we harbor no resentment per se, but we might have to rough up some of the Ivy League a little bit today.
Yeah, and they should expect that from Liberty Lens. That's not necessarily out of bounds, but as usual, I'm sure Mike will handle it with his usual class and aplomb.
Well, we'll see about that.
We'll see about those issues. Okay.
We rough up everybody on your show here, John. Everyone gets roughed up a little bit.
Equally. That's the whole point of libertarianism. We play no favorites. All right, let me tee it up for Mike. As he alluded to, we're going to be talking about Harvard University, and it's a little bit of a kerfuffle with the Trump administration. Let me kind of tee it up for Mr. Termott. As we mentioned, there's a conflict between the Trump administration and Harvard University, and it's recently escalated more than usual this month. And it centers on the administration's demands for sweeping policy changes at Harvard in exchange for continued federal funding. The administration accuses Harvard of fostering anti-Semitism and providing a liberal bias, particularly in its handling of the pro-Palestinian protests following the October 23 Hamas attack on Israel and the subsequent Gaza war. Harvard, in turn, has rejected these demands as an overreach of federal authority, arguing they violate its autonomy, constitutional rights, and academic freedom. Now, this isn't just political concerns necessarily, Mike. The dispute has led to significant financial repercussions, with the administration freezing over $2 billion in federal grants and contracts to Harvard and threatening further action, such as revoking the university's tax-exempt status and perhaps flying a little bit under the radar, its ability to recruit and enroll foreign students, which I think is something we ought to talk about because that's a little bit underreported and underanalyzed, I think, when we talk about
it. It is a little bit underreported and enormously important because it puts, you know, our entire program as a nation of recruiting people to our universities in a different light. And I think that issue has long tentacles.
It does, in fact. All right, so let's start out with the basic here, Mike. Where do you stand on this dispute?
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack.
Sure.
I thought your summary was pretty good. There are a couple of hot button words there that, you know, I don't know who chose exactly what those words were, but let's start out with the word funding, because the administration does want to cut off as a threat, right? Wants to threaten to cut off funding to Harvard. The vast majority of money that we're talking about is in the form of contracts for service. It's not, you know, here's a chunk of money because we think you're good looking. And I think that some of the press has incorrectly labeled this as funding as though it were a gift, right?
Like a tuition grant or something.
Yeah,
it's not like tuition grants. This would be some, if I can just jump in because I'm not too smart, let me understand. This would also take the form of, for example, research money. For example,
it's
like
research money and it's programmatic. So, there are programs that have multiple functions underneath them. One aspect might be research. One aspect might be to spread certain messaging. You see where we're getting into hot water already. It might be toward employing certain professors or teaching certain classes. And that whole program may be sort of a box, all too often a black box, but it might be a box. And the grant is meant to support that whole program.
Right.
And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that this is not just, here's $1 billion, you know, you guys do with it whatever you want. And so for the in the main, this is money that has expenses attached to it. So if Harvard doesn't get the money for something, they need to decide, eat the cost and continue the program, or tank the program altogether, and that includes a lot of research projects that I think most Americans would consider important. It's not necessarily important that all of this research be done by Harvard,
right,
or be done by a university, or be done through a contract with the federal government or any other government, but it is research that is important. So there's a lot to unpack there. You know, sometimes we have this fight about, well, if they don't get the funding, it's no big deal. They shouldn't be getting money anyway. Well, it's a fee for service, so you got to decide whether you want that service done. And then the other side talks about, well, it's cancer research. Of course we want it done. But then you got to stop yourself and think, well, does it have to be done by Harvard? Does it have to be done by a federal contract? And for those of us who would like to see a separation of science and state in the long run, the long run doesn't mean, you know, by Thursday at 2, but in the long run, I think that we want a separation of science and state because we've seen so many biases as we went through the COVID regime, for example, and right, plenty of examples before that and after that with the pharmaceutical industry and surgical equipment industries, all kinds of medical related industries. We have seen science and scientific research really biased in some unfortunate ways when the government gets involved because everything becomes politicized. So having said all that, that's the great majority of the $2 billion that the Trump administration is threatening to cut off. And to put that in context a little bit, first of all, let me say the $2 billion is a great deal of money. It's actually, and I don't think most of your audience knows this, more money than I have, for example, by about $2 billion. And this is money that is significant, would be significant to any institution. And I don't think anyone should pretend otherwise. Harvard does have a $50 billion endowment, right? They're sitting in assets of $50 billion. So could they weather this and continue their programming as though nothing happened? Yes, they could. Giving up $2 billion, does that matter? Yes, it does. And the Trump administration is also threatening to cut off their tax-exempt status. They're ordering the IRS already to look into this, that it could be worth a lot more over the long haul than $2 billion. So this is a very, very big deal. And what the Trump administration, of course, is worried about and what they're upset about is that Harvard is an organization that is taking a lot of government money, is heavily biased in one particular ideological direction, as most universities, not all, but as most universities are. And turns out a lot of graduate students and undergrads that are anti-conservative, that don't like Donald Trump, don't like his administration. In some cases, you know, they're critical for reasons that make sense. And in some cases, they're critical just because they don't like him.
And because they're kids, right? Let's throw that in there. They're kids, right?
So for the most part. Of course they're kids. And some of the professors are kids too.
Yeah.
So we get that. Now, the excuse, the hook, is, I think, twofold. One, the administration is suggesting that Harvard did a crappy job of protecting Jewish kids from feeling intimidated and being exposed to a very, very biased environment regarding the Israeli-Hamas-Gaza conflict. And I don't think there are too many people who would go out on a limb and defend everything that Harvard did and say that they did a great job at this and, you know, leave them alone. They're on top of it, right? I think Harvard themselves have admitted, you know, they've appointed a new board to sort of manage some of the processes that they follow. They've admitted that they could have done a better job. That's not to let them off the hook, right? I'm not suggesting that because they've got a new group of people to look into this, that therefore we should say, well, okay, congratulations. You guys are terrific. I don't mean to sound like that at all. But they have at least recognized that they need to do better in some regard. And then the the other issue is that according to standing federal statute, the federal government is not allowed to tolerate in an institution that takes federal money, the federal government should not be tolerating a biased environment, full stop. And that is a problem. Now, all of your viewers will already see the problems where this is going, right? Who should decide what a biased environment is? Who should decide what's enough in terms of protecting Jewish kids from feeling intimidated? The administration has suggested in this battle royale between the two parties that the administration should have a right to approve individuals appointed to a board to oversee the eradication of bias on campus. Oh boy.
Right. Yeah.
No one in the Trump administration would be happy if the Biden administration were approving of appointments to such a board, right?
Yeah.
And so you see where this is going is you don't have to be a libertarian to be worried that the government is probably not the appropriate organization to oversee the eradication of bias on a university campus.
And you know, Mike, see, I wanted to jump in here because obviously what you're saying is I'm aligned with, you know, but here's where I think a lot of us are concerned, perhaps people more wary of authoritarian or fascist seeds than I am. Right. So to the extent that, okay, let's get past the argument of whether, as you said, the government should be funding at all. Right. So, unless you're in the 3% of this country that considers themselves to be anarchists, let's shelve that argument for right now, okay?
Sure, put a pin in that.
Right. Given the existence of funding, though, here's where someone like me has a concern, right? So if you're telling me the government will now withhold funding from any university that explicitly has policies against certain ideologies or certain ideologies being able to attain certain positions or get certain degrees or form certain social clubs on campus, I am with you. As back in the 80s and being a conservative in New York City on a New York City campus, I remember being banned from certain classes. They would say your type is not welcome in this poli-sci course about humane treatment of people.
That
right?
may have because, had nothing to do with your ideology, John.
Well, that too. It could have been my hygiene. But having said that, that's not what's happening here. They have targeted, to my knowledge, two campuses in particular. One is Columbia.
Yep.
One is Harvard.
Yep.
Both Ivy League schools, both famously not conservative environments. Let's be honest.
Choice of words. Okay, let's go with that.
Yeah. So now, taken into consideration, also recent other administration positions, and this it wasn't in our notes, Mike, because I just saw it yesterday, late in the day, the forming of the anti-Christian committee within the administration, which basically, when Bondi announced it, I think just about every cabinet member was in that photo op. So when you start to piece together any two of these things, where independently you might say, all right, maybe I could see the point in the bias in this, bias in that. But when you string it all together, you start to get these sort of like this feeling in the pit of your stomach, like, are we moving towards Christian nationalism? Are we moving to the point where the administration's goal is like that? And as it ties into Harvard, why not just say we're withholding funding until these ideologically neutral conditions are met? So don't tie it into anti-Semitism necessarily. Don't tie it into liberal, conservative, MAGA, non-MAGA. Just say here's 10 things that would pass any reasonable court scrutiny and say they're neutral.
Understood. And I think that there's a couple of important things to say about that. There's no such thing as neutral. If you were to look at what it is that the administration is asking for, if you were to read it from a different administration, if you were to read it in a different context, you might come to the conclusion that it was neutral in the sense that, yeah, they say they want you to eradicate anti-Semitism. You know, that's fine. But they're not talking, you know, in that memo, they're not talking about specific groups that should have a bias in favor of them. They do talk about eradicating DEI. Do I wish there were different language attached to that? Sure, but I wish that the administration weren't having this fight with the university in the first place.
Right.
Interestingly, you brought up Columbia. Columbia has chosen a different strategy for dealing with the administration than Harvard right. has. Columbia has decided to deal, to try to come up with an agreement right. with the administration so that they can march ahead, obtain their funding, and to a certain extent capitulate administratively. We'll see whether that implies in the long run capitulation ideologically. It may not, or at least at the very least, Columbia may believe at the moment that it does not believe that it is capitulating ideologically, only administratively. We'll see how that plays out. Harvard, you know, you've gotta hand it to the lefties. You've gotta, on some level, be proud of them. They've dug in their heels. They say that they don't want to deal with the administration. They're going to court over this. They want to do what it is that they want to do. Now, as libertarians, we appreciate that, right? I mean, who doesn't love a good fight, especially when the other side of the fight is the government of the United States, whether that's the administration or Congress or even a court. Sometimes we all love a fight against the government. Right. So Harvard is digging in its heels and deciding that no one has the right to even oversee what it is that they're doing. Now, a lot of this, we believe as libertarians, would be fixed if there weren't the funding. I know you're suggesting we need to take the funding as given, but this is one of the reasons why we don't believe that there should be a Department of right. Education. This is, you know, the Department of Education 2.0. It's just another way for the federal government to exert influence. And I think that that brings us to a political point that we might as well address. I think there is an elephant in the room. And that is, see if I can describe, I haven't tried to describe this before.
Okay.
But libertarians are not interesting, John. Libertarians are not interesting right. to most people. I believe that most voters want an ideologue in office. As long as you are logging their ideologues, right, as long as you're talking their language, espousing their ideas, I think most voters want an ideologue. They don't want to look under the hood and ask, how are you going to accomplish this, right? This is why Trump is so popular. People are upset about the Biden administration not paying any attention to the border and anyone coming across the border completely unvetted,
right.
even unidentified. Trump administration says they're going to take care of that and deport people who are here illegally. I think most people are like, yeah, that's a good idea. And right. when Trump says, I hate criminals, I hate them so bad that if you're homegrown, I'm going to deport you too. I think most people figure, I'm not a criminal. I'm never going to be a criminal. That doesn't bother me. You go get them, tiger. And I think that the implication is that the administration will eventually bump into the Constitution and that that's okay. Libertarians tend to pursue one of three strategies or protocols. One is we support everyone's opinion, right? I don't want to criticize anyone's opinion because you have a right for your truth to be heard, right? And so none of us want to talk about, well, you know, what Bob said the other day is really stupid.
Right.
Because, you know, we're libertarian and he's got a right to shoot his mouth off. And then the second, we all do some of that. I probably do too much of that myself. And the second category is, I put myself in the following category, which is I get nervous when people talk about certain opinions in a public policy context that I believe are no business of the government. So you can talk policy all you want, and you can talk about faith all you want. But when political pundits talk about faith in the context of questioning regarding public policy, I get real nervous, even if I agree with your answers about faith.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, when I think I might be in your category on that issue, Mike.
Yeah, I think that that's right. You know, when we turn the cameras off, we talk about a lot of stupid stuff that we wouldn't talk about when the cameras are rolling. I think that that's, in some sense, appropriate. Yeah. We're trying to signal that, you know, the fact that I was raised Lutheran and by a Calvinist should be completely irrelevant to how we feel about certain things, so I never mentioned that. You'll have to edit that out. So, and then the third strategy is one that we don't seem to follow, but I wonder whether it's viable and makes more sense, and that is a full-throated expression of your opinions in a public policy context and trust that our democratic institutions, our constitutional institutions, are going to hold and provide the guardrails that are necessary.
Hmm.
In other words, is there an argument to be made that I have not heretofore made? But maybe shame on me. Maybe there is an argument to be made. Look, the American people want ideologues, right? We got the second Obama administration. We got the Biden administration.
Right.
We're getting the Trump administration. These administrations should not be mistaken for libertarian.
No, not at all.
They're ideological. Given that, should we at some point recognize this is what the American people want? This is how democracy works. It is not in some sense per se unlibertarian or unconstitutional for an administration to challenge the limits of the Constitution. Maybe that's how it should work. In other words, maybe we think some of the things the Trump administration is doing is goofy because they wind up in court. But maybe if we don't necessarily disagree with where their hearts are at, maybe if we trusted the court system, the institutions representing the Constitution, we wouldn't, you know, get our panties all bunched up when we run into these conflicts. And I think part of the reason that we do get upset, and I'm not saying I don't, I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get very, very worried when there's a lawsuit between the administration and a university. That worries me a lot because I wonder who's going to be next. I worry about what the implications are. I worry about the fact that America's system of higher education is the envy of the world, and specifically because it's been independent of the government. Our central bank, as much as you and I get all bunched up, you know, railing against the Fed, our central bank works better than other central banks around the world because it is independent of the administration. Okay, so there's a lot to be nervous about, but if an administration is elected to push the boundaries, maybe what we need to do is make sure that the guardrails are hard rather than getting mad at the people who are pushing against the guardrails, which is natural.
Yeah.
And one of the things that always haunts me is people who say that they're mad about, you know, the Trump administration taking one position or another, whatever. You know, you're upset about how the Trump administration is handling immigration and deportations.
Right.
Well, whose fault is that? Right? Don't tell me that Democratic administrations in the past don't bear some responsibility.
Oh, of course they do. Yes.
Of course they do. you know, to think that there's not going to be a backlash against an essentially open border is just being silly. Of course you're going to get an administration that makes great political gains by saying we're going to get this situation under control. You can't then say, well, I didn't mean that much control.
Right, right. And Mike, I hear where you're coming from, especially in, I like the way you broke it into the three potential strategic responses. That was nicely done. Particular to this one you just talked about, the one thing I would say is, let me flip it around on you. Hitting up on your days on the street, days in at the Fed and everything, I'm sure you and I were always, when we presented a strategy, say for a financial instrument or something, what was the first thing we got? What's the risk-reward analysis? What's the risk-reward ratio on this, right? And, hey, for the bigger reward, you tolerated more risk. For a more steady reward, a dependable reward, you wanted to minimize that volatility, right? If we kind of take that sort of mindset and apply it to what you just said, which to some extent I agree with, let's test the boundaries and stuff, but I think your conditional afterwards is super key, right? If we feel the guardrails will hold, right? And
exactly.
And now my pushback to you on this one in a healthy intellectual debate right now is, will those guardrails hold? Because I think what we're testing here is not, for example, the proper debate we're having about Harvard and university funding in general, whether we can impose ideological standards in return for that funding, if it exists. I think those are healthy debates, right? And that's why we're at Adam. Where I have my potential concern is when what we're challenging are the guardrails themselves.
Yeah.
And to diverge a little bit, it's just like I worry when I hear we're going to challenge the ability for Trump to have a third term. We're going to challenge the ability for habeas corpus being required. We're going to,
or we're challenging judges and threatening them with impeachment, or we're threatening to replace the head of the Federal Reserve.
There you go.
Yeah, these are examples that undermine the guardrails themselves, and there is no response other than cut it out that makes any sense from our point of view.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that properly viewed, the presidential oath of office on January 20 is not so much, I promise to defend the Constitution, as much as it has come to be recognizably implied, is I promise to abide by the Constitution. I think that's as much as we can expect these days, right? I was very disappointed with George W. Bush and the Patriot Act, right?
Of course.
Because the Patriot Act, I would argue, makes your point.
Yes.
The guardrails didn't hold. The courts allowed the Bush administration to do whatever it wanted. The FISA courts, right?
Correct.
The Supreme Court should have said, no, we're not putting up with this bullshit. But it didn't.
Right.
And it would have been nice if someone in the Bush administration had said, you know what, this isn't constitutional, and so we're not going to push it, rather than it's our job to push and push and push, and it's their job to push back, and so we'll see how this goes, which is really, I think, how the American federal government has operated for a long, I was about to say since the Bush administration, but truthfully for a long, long, long time, that administrations don't feel like it's their job to defend the Constitution. They feel like it's their job to push it. And then, abide by it. Now, there are folks right now who are afraid that the Trump administration won't even abide by it.
Yes.
I don't think we have evidence of that yet. So I think we'd be out over our skis to say, well, the administration is not going to abide by court orders. There are court orders at the moment that the administration is resisting, but that's you know, a matter of days. We'll see how that plays out over weeks and months before we condemn the administration to the category of not abiding by the Constitution. I think that would be a bit much at the moment. But yeah, I agree with you. It's all about whether those guardrails hold. If, for example, a court were to say the administration does have the right to replace the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, that would be huge. That would be huge. That would be, in my view, worse than the administration just replacing justices on the Supreme Court. Because it would undermine the central bank in a way that would be irreconcilable with having the world's reserve currency. That's fundamental worldwide depression stuff right there. That would be absolutely horrific. So I was glad to see that the administration announced today that they were not going to replace the head of the Fed. So that's good. I mean, they will, Jerome Powell, they will when his term is up. And I do worry about whatever dingleberry they find to stick in there, but that's a worry for a different moment.
But at least they'll be abiding by what we perceive as being the proper process for a president replacing a Fed chairman. I think that is a lot of what we talk about, right? It's the appreciation for process, not because we necessarily agree or disagree with the outcome that's desired by the administration, but just the fundamental respect for the process, because at some point you're going to be at the wrong end of that gun barrel, and that's the issue.
Yeah, and I think my point is that we need to recognize the reality of the situation, that you're going to get a lot of ideology going in both directions. And in that sense, as much as I appreciate a good fight and I like that Harvard is digging in their heels and I wish that Columbia were too, just for the sport of it, to watch them go at it, I like that. I think that you've got to recognize that the administration is not wrong about Harvard being a place where some strange ideologies have taken root, and it's not a friendly place to conservatism. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. That's okay. Yeah. But it's really anti-conservative. I think that's very important. We used to say you can be an economist or you can be from Harvard, but you can't be both.
Right.
I still think that that's probably true. That might be a little harsh, but
It was that old joke, right, that you went through, if you were a college student, and this goes back to when we were in college, Mike, you kind of understood if you were not a liberal, that was a rite of passage for you. You had to get through the liberal institution and take away from it what you thought was important for your education. And I think all of us had to go through that if you were not a liberal. But I think now trying to codify it becomes an issue. Okay, let's just move on to the second part of this, because I think it's important to point this out as well. We mentioned the funding being at stake, and we've talked about the pros and cons of turning that off, digging your heels in, approaching it in a different manner. But the other thing that we mentioned at the top of the show that I think is more subtle, and here's where I think the administration might be wrong, is curtailing the ability of Harvard to recruit foreign students. Because I don't know if our audience truly appreciates the impact this will have. Let me throw one stat at you. If you talk, now I'm talking about the hard sciences, what should be largely apolitical. We're talking about biologists, chemists, mathematicians, physicists, right? Engineers. Most of the overwhelming majority of our PhD graduates in the hard sciences were not born in this country.
Right.
They are from somewhere else. In the New York State university system, that figure is somewhere near over 90%, where the PhD candidates are not native-born American students. Now, that speaks to two things, in my opinion. One, our educational system has really fallen by the wayside. Two, we are still a magnet for the best and brightest from around the world. You said we are the envy of every other college a system around the world. And I still believe that's true largely because of the independence.
Yes.
In other countries where you have free education, free university education, they decide what you'll study for the most part. Yes. Like they'll determine, are you qualified, in our opinion, to be a doctor? Okay, we'll pay for your medical school, but not everybody gets to give it a shot, right? So talk to me about that. How do you feel about the administration's position to put the squeeze on Harvard by saying, hey, we won't allow any student visas for Harvard?
I think it goes in the same category as tariffs. The administration is looking for ways to punish people. But again, as I have said many times, and you have too, I think the administration is getting some bad staff work here.
Right.
The staff in the side of the administration needs to recognize, just like with tariffs, it's a tax on Americans, right? You may be searching for a way to punish others, and you are, right?
Right.
Other countries are upset about this, but it is fundamentally a tax on Americans, and that hurts all of us voters, by the way. It is also not good for our institutions, and I believe not good for the development of technology inside the United States, to be cutting off these institutions' access to students via the visa process. Many of these, I don't have data on how many, but many of these students remain in the United States. This is not all just a technology transfer program abroad.
Right.
That's just not true. By the way, to the extent to which it were true, that would fundamentally be okay too. We should have free trade in technology. These people are actually paying tuition to these organizations, to these higher education institutions. And if they want to sell an education that eventually goes somewhere else, that's fine. I don't necessarily want to support that with taxpayer dollars, which brings us back to the funding issue. But this is a cutting off student visas is really a black eye to the imagery, the brand of America. This is something that dovetails nicely, the visa program dovetails nicely both with our brand of being pluralistic and tolerant and welcoming of all cultures and welcoming of immigration, being a nation of immigration and multiculturalism, and the technological leader, and related to that, having the world's best system of higher education. All of that comes together in this visa program. I don't think the administration is very good at understanding the appropriate branding of our country. And I don't think that, which is somewhat ironic because the president surely understands branding, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I just don't think that he's getting good staff work. I think that the staff does not recognize that the brand of our economy and how we interact with other economies around the world is undermined when you do things like this. And I wish that they would leave the student visa program alone. It makes these institutions more competitive. It reinforces their competitiveness relative to institutions around the world. It brings in money, by the way, in many cases that some of these institutions could really use. I don't think Harvard is dying for the next tuition dollar from some, you know, math genius from Pakistan, but there are plenty of organizations that are. You know, when I was an engineering student, several thousand years ago, when we were working on the development of the wheel, we had a dozen kids that the People's Republic of China was paying huge amounts of money for, right?
Right.
And these kids, boy, it was tough to compete with them, I'll tell you that much, because they were there to do nothing but study and work and conduct their research. But the university appreciated that coin, I'll tell you that much. And then when the kids moved into research projects, they were able to raise money off of that. There are plenty of cases where these interactions can be very profitable for these institutions. And in many cases, that's the kind of thing that you want. You want these, you know, I went to a tech school, right? An engineering school. And that's the kind of development that you want in these institutions. It wasn't a bastion of liberalism. We couldn't even spell politics when I was a kid in an engineering program. So it's easy to throw babies out with bathwater, and I think that we need to be very, very careful about that.
And it's interesting because you mentioned your engineering students that the People's Republic of China was paying a lot of money to come educate. Here's the other thing, because I've had similar interactions when I was a grad student, and we were building the first parallel computer boards in the mid-80s. Again, large population of PRC originated students. Yeah. I'm willing to bet, from my personal anecdotal experience, that 80% of them stayed in this country after graduation.
A lot of them did.
None of them had any desire to go back to a communist country. Once they were here, once they had acquired the skills to earn a living here, and joking aside, aside from the individual liberty involved, the United States reaped the benefit of their brilliance, reaped the benefit of their hard work and study. So to your point, what the Trump administration is actually trying to accomplish, other than strong-arming on this particular issue, like you said, much like with tariffs, I think is puzzling to anybody who puts any thought behind it. And my last question, Mike, to tie it all in, is how much of – we all know the president is a populist. He's driven by the adoration of his base. I don't think any of us would dispute that, right? How much of this do you feel is a general populist – wave of anti-intellectualism? Because you do see a lot of this, again, anecdotally, if you go on X and other social media platforms, whenever something is announced against Columbia or Harvard, you see a lot of these, that's what I voted for. I voted to end the intellectual elites.
He's not going after Ohio State, right?
Right. He's not going after Michigan's the Wolverine football program, right?
He's not going after Fordham, right?
He's not going after Fordham either, right?
Because Fordham can defend itself. That's a big difference right there.
And it's a D3 school, so nobody cares. But here's the point I'm trying to make. Do you feel that this anti-university sentiment in the country, is the president a reflection of that, or is he – do you think in some ways creating that because it plays into his...
I think he's a reflection of it. And I also think to tie back to what I was saying about reflexivity back against other administrations, Harvard could have played this better over the past 500 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Just to
be real, Harvard could be taking a different PR approach itself.
Correct. It could, yes.
You know, to be fair, you know, someone in that boardroom, and I'm sure the conversation the past week or two has been, tell the administration, we're going to do what we want, we're going to dig in our heels, yada, yada, yada. Okay, good. Rah, rah, you do you. I love it. I'm a libertarian. But if I were their advisor, if I were on the board, I would have said, okay, yeah, let's dig in our heels. But when we get over this hump, when we win in court, and they will, they'll be fine in court, whether that's 2 months or 2 years from now, I think we need to take a hard look in the mirror for whether it is actually true that when the American public looks at us, they see an institution that operates in its own interest rather than the interest of the population, of the society, of the nation in which we operate. Now, we claim to be all about that, right? We claim that our mission is to pursue the truth. Aye. That's a lot to bite off when you're only representing one piece of the ideological spectrum. And so I would suggest to my fellow board members, if I were in that room, we need to do some serious soul searching, because this is not the last. If we plan on doing this for another 400 years,
right,
this will not be the last time that a populist administration takes a look at us and says, who the hell do you think you are?
Correct. And I would also throw that sentiment back to the Trump administration, because in the same way you're threatening funding based on political ideology, largely, the next one could be going back to DEI. Hey, you're not representing the ideological needs of the transgender community. So yep. Here's how we're going to withhold funding unless you have a wing dedicated to use the parlance DEI.
And well, that's a good point. The difference between the two is the Trump administration knows, denial notwithstanding, knows it's going to be done in 4 years. And Harvard is playing for 400 years.
Right, right. There's a long game involved that, fortunately, I would argue on the balance, fortunately, the term limits of the presidency. But you never know. There's Vance in tow, and, you know, we'll see what happens. As Steve Bannon says, he's convinced Trump will be in for a third term come 2028.
I'm convinced that he won't be.
Yeah, me too, but, you know, we'll see. All right, Mike. Is there anything else you want to end this episode on?
No, that wraps Harvard. It up. I do worry that Harvard doesn't know who they are, but I'm gratified that you know damned well who you are, John, and that's why it's a joy to spend this time with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. And to Harvard, listen to Mike Tremont. He's a smart dude. Dig in your heels, but reassess yourselves. Okay, everyone, you've been watching Liberty Lens right here on grumblingsmedia.com. Check us out on all the major platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X, Getter, anywhere you can find us. Just look for @grumblingsmedia, all one word. Until next week, when we'll have another episode of Liberty Lens, for Mike Tremont and myself,